listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years' experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
We are here on a glorious afternoon, sunny California. If you're not here, you should be here. We're right across the street from Disneyland. Always a fun jaunt over there if we have the chance. But we are talking today about Kavanaugh. We will see in upcoming vote what takes place. But I wanted to touch in just a minute here a little bit about some of the pro-abortion arguments, because I know you guys are hearing your friends having these same ridiculous conversations. So we want to give you a little bit of aid in debunking some of the crazy assumptions that are being made if suddenly Roe versus Wade is overturned. We'll also talk about taking control of your devices again, parenting in the internet age. What is a healthy form of communication? Do you have any plans for what that looks like? And then how really providing is a fundamental part of the masculine genius, who men are. And we have to recognize that that is a heavy burden and something that they're often thinking about. And it really impacts what you say in the midst of this issue. So, Chris Kavanaugh, there has been so much, I think 30 arrests now that have taken place during the hearings. And, you know, civil disobedience, that's a whole nother conversation.
Your tolerance is showing. I tend to wonder if we would be better off as a culture if we moved away from television with our political discourse and we just went back to radio. Like that, so if Supreme Court hearings or whatever it is were not televised, they were just like long format radio. You had to listen to them, right? And so you take out all of the soundbite nonsense, and it just comes down to you take the political theater out of it. Mm-hmm. Because so much of what's going on right now, and for instance, the Kavanaugh hearings, is it's just political theater. The reality of that, of the situation in the Senate is that, in our House of Representatives, all of it is that he'll get through. There's nothing, he's going to get through. Exactly. He will be on the Supreme Court. And I'm not making a judgment statement. I'm just saying it's going to happen because that's the way the votes line up. And so we spend all of this time really just, people, running campaign and people are launching their campaign for president right now because they have the opportunity to do this political theater, and it's absurd.
I hear people saying things like women will die if he is put on the Supreme Court.
That's just insane.
I hear this, but this is the thing. Some people really, truly believe that. And what breaks my heart is that women are dying because of the voice that you are using right now to say that against Kavanaugh, who's not saying, oh, I'm going to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. He's also not said that there's a legal right to abortion, but he's also not said that there's no right to abortion.
Yeah, which one of our wonderful California representatives was it who said that millions of women died in illegal abortions before Roe v. Wade, which was absurd? Who was that? I can't remember who that was.
I don't know.
Feinstein? It was one of our amazing. But and it was her number was off by a degree of millions.
I have numbers here, and we're going to get into that just a little bit today because this is what's really important. And Chris, we have to remember that the pro-abortion movement in the United States, their goal was specifically to target one group of people. And if they could target that one group of people, abortion would become the law of the land. And that group of people were Catholics. Mm-hmm. If they could split the vote with Catholics, they had an 8-point strategy that NARAL used, Dr. Bernard Nathanson, and falsifying records, falsifying numbers, and just creating these different spins in campaigns of sound bites like you were just talking about that would really change the landscape of what before was a public opinion that was against abortion.
Right. It's interesting. We forget the power of the Catholic presence in the United States. I mean, it used to be like the League of Catholic Voters would decide what was decent in movies or not, really.
Right.
And you had to make movies in such a way that it would get past like Catholics, or they wouldn't, or they just would fail, right?
Right.
And we have given up all of our ability to influence our culture by just becoming kind of lemmings and following everyone else, rather than standing up and saying, this is right, this is wrong, these are immutable truths.
Right.
Now we're just part of the kind of the all of the negative of what democracy can become.
We live in a world where God doesn't matter, nor does your morality matter. And, you know, there's so much to be said of that, which is why you and I need to be very wise when we are responding to different arguments. Ultimately, yes, we want to lead people to God, but we have to use some of the science that is so God-oriented. He created the world and ultimately points back to him.
Well, science and just facts. I mean, you know, again, saying millions of women died in illegal abortions prior to Roe v. Wade when that was off by millions. I mean, like, it was like an annual number of, it was ridiculously small. And it could probably, again, I don't have the stats in front of me, but the number, I think, was like hundreds. What were the stats?
So here's what was happening. Part of the strategy was to say, well, women will die. Women are already dying because of illegal abortion. So the claim was, and this is part of that quote unquote coat hanger idea that people try to present, which is totally false. And we'll get into that. But basically, they were saying the lie is that between 9 and 10, that a million illegal abortions were taking place annually in the United States. And after that, it was between 5,000 and 10,000 women every year that were dying.
Right,
well,
5,000 and 10,000. Okay.
And that's a really big number, right, to claim. But also they're saying it's illegal, so you don't fully have an idea. Well, here are the real numbers. So they say 1 million. It was not even 98,000 illegal abortions were taking place. So that's from 98,000 to 1 million. That's a huge jump. Not only that, but only 250 women, not 1,000, only 250 women died from abortion.
Right.
And so that's a very, very inflated number that they were using. And Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who was the head of NARAL, who came out projecting these numbers, giving this information, ended up having a major conversion to the pro-life stance and spent the rest of his life till his dying breath fighting to share that they targeted Catholics, they falsified numbers, they falsified stories. And this is one of the things he wanted people to know before he died.
You know, I would be interested to see what the statistic is on women who have died having abortions since Roe v. Wade.
Right.
Right. Because we know that that happens. I mean, and we know that that is an issue. It's something that does come up. You know, statistically, are women better off?
Right.
You know, as far as mortality is concerned.
Well, and that's part of the problem is that even here in the United States, they will not put down the cause of death because of abortion. They'll say, oh, the cause of death was hemorrhaging. The cause of death was X, but never the cause was an abortion. So those numbers, we don't have any idea what they are. So that's our objection when people are saying, well, women are going to die if we have abortion. Well, one, women are dying because of abortion, because it is the law of the land that if you are a developing woman in the womb, you can be murdered.
You know, I think one of the arguments people make for abortion is, well, if we didn't have abortion, there would be all of these unwanted children, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you go statistically speaking, and we talked about this last episode, 40% of children are born outside of wedlock today, right?
Right.
In 1960, it was 4%. Right. So since you've had legalized abortion, you haven't seen a more stable family. What you've seen is the deterioration of the family. And you've largely seen the number of children born outside of wedlock spike ridiculously. Right. And so you go back to a time when this didn't exist. And guess what? You had less unwed births. Right. You had more children born into families. It's amazing how many things we do as a culture that don't do what we say they do, yet we continue to do them.
And
right?
Chris is saying here is that there was no demand for abortion at that time. Yes, there were some back alley abortions taking place, but the demand wasn't there. But you suddenly make abortion legal. Well, people believe that what is legal is what is moral. It's an option. We've already taken sex outside of marriage. We've taken babies outside of sex. So abortion's that fail safe. So we've got to look at a couple of the other objections. conversations, because people, there was actually one of the Democrat senators received 3,000 coat hangers from pro-aborts claiming that, well, here's a reminder that if you vote for Kavanaugh, then women are going to go back to the coat hanger abortion. First of all, there are many ways to obtain an abortion through simple cocktails that you can grab things out of your own kitchen cabinet to have an abortion. It does not require a coat hanger, and that was not something that was popularly done. In fact, that those illegal abortions that were being procured were by practicing physicians as well. Even right. in places like Mexico and other places where they've not had abortion, they were still taking place by physicians who were willing to do them.
Right. It's, again, it's a myth. It's a marketing strategy.
Right.
Right. And that's what it is. And again, I think there's just this need on the part of modern consumers. Like, there's so much media being thrown out of us. We just have to stop and think critically. And you got to ask questions. You know, you read an article that says, oh, this. Okay, show me your sources.
Right.
Right? Show me your sources. Read the study it's based on. And more often than not, you're going to find that that headline was just an overblown piece of trash. And again, the whole coat hanger thing, it's a marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And that largely has been bought.
Right. And you have to remember, women are dying from abortions. The women in the womb. We look at what's happening in China. 37 million more men than women. As of next year, there will be 30 million men, spouseless men. And you know what's happening in China? In addition to women being targeted to be aborted, that we're targeting women in utero that are developing, we're seeing women are so unhappy in China that worldwide, the suicide rates have always historically been higher among men. That's not the case in China. There are 500 women every single day in China committing suicide.
Wow.
Because they are so impacted by the destruction of motherhood, by forced abortion, by the missing family members, and the degradation ultimately of women in their country. So you want to talk about abortion's impact? There, go and look at what's happening in China, and why don't you advocate for them?
Right. You know, and again, the pro-abortion side wants to say that these aren't human beings that are being killed. The biology doesn't back that up. I mean, it's a human being, but also the emotional turmoil, you know, the wreckage of what happens inside of a person as a result of an abortion backs that up too.
Right.
I mean, you know, we, again, studies have shown the depression, that happens, the, you know, post-abortion, because there's something inside of you that's not a rational part. It's, you know, there's a knowledge that only a mother can have of the life that was in her and the knowledge that that life has been taken by her own choice.
And she will always live with that.
Yeah.
She will always live with that. And that's why, you know, just kind of to close one of those arguments, people are upset because Kavanaugh will not say that there's a right to abortion. He's not said that there is or is not.
Well, the Constitution, okay, constitutionally speaking, that's not the right
exactly.
that abortion, it was, well, I think it was right to privacy is how they argued for abortion.
Yes,
to come
they
in,
argued
right?
to it by right to privacy. But here's the
Most
deal.
Most people don't know that, though.
Here's the deal, though. Your singular choice ends the moment you have conceived another human being, because there are two individuals there. When another life begins, your choice alone ends as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I want to put a brief plug. My former co-host, Don Johnson, we miss him here at Trending. He is doing some great work, especially with his documentary, Unprotected. I want to put a brief plug in because he has movie screenings across the country, especially in California, coming up over the next few weeks. In fact, he has some in your neck of the woods, Murrieta, in early
cool.
October. I'm going to be actually at one of these screenings, joining Don, I believe, for a Q&A, and that will be in San Diego on September 25th. And I also know that Riverside has a movie screening on September 24th. So go check out unprotectedmovie.com. You can check out the screening tab and where all of the screens are taking place. There are a ton of them up and down the state and across the country. Chris, you know, I want to talk about really the impact as we're in the midst of Kavanaugh, as we're in the midst of the sex abuse scandal in the church. Things get, you get to hit an adrenaline rush with news and media. And sometimes people get excited because there's so much going on, and excited, not necessarily that they're happy at what's happening, but they're just chewing on it. And I think that this points to an overall issue that we become so consumed today by our devices.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that the 24-hour news cycle, and I've heard people talk about this, you know, in various ways. I think it's even sped up. our attention span's gotten smaller. So stories of great import happen, and they immediately run to the next story. Or what happens is the story comes up, and you get caught in that cycle of checking every 5 minutes to see if there's any developments. Whether that was God forbid, like a school shooting, right? We want to check and see because we want the information right now. We're in the studio on 9/11, and I remember when the attacks of 9/11 happened, just being caught in this. Constantly checking the news, constantly, buying magazines, constantly, because it was before smartphones, but just turning on the TV to find out, where were we? What was going on? What was happening? And since the advent of smartphones, I feel like that has kicked up so much where it's like, you used to read the paper in the morning. And maybe if you're really pro, you got the evening edition as well, right? And now it's constant.
Yeah, we never stop. It's interesting because you use that comparison of the newspaper. I'll have people respond to me, Timur, you talk a lot about maybe not checking the news as much, eliminating your device use. And they said, but maybe people are doing what they used to do with the newspaper. I would agree with you, but the problem is in the newspaper, even if you read it cover to cover, you had an end versus today we're looking at the Kavanaugh hearing. Well, we're not just going to read one article about the Kavanaugh hearing. We're going to read sometimes 20 in one day about all the different nuances of the Kavanaugh or the sex abuse scandal, whatever it might be.
Well, and thank you to the algorithms on social media and on searches. You're also going to get pointed towards your tribe. So you're going to read those articles, but they're all typically going to be coming from the same point of view. And so you're not really critically processing the information. You're just sort of adopting the opinions of whatever tribe the social media funneled you into.
Right.
Right. And I think that's where it really becomes interesting. Whereas it used to be, we'd read the newspapers, and newspapers were biased. I mean, we can look back at the history of our country and say there was definitely bias on the part of our newspapers, but you would then go and take what you read and you talk to the people in your community. You would have conversations.
There we go.
And then you process the information in a different way. Whereas now everybody kind of is on their device by themselves. The way they react to it is they don't go talk to their neighbors. Yeah. They post on social media and essentially that goes out to the rest of the tribe who's already been funneled into that kind of echo chamber. And so they just get more rigid instead of seeing our neighbor or people who disagree with us as people of different opinions. They're other. They're outside of our tribe. They're someone to be opposed. They're the devil. They're, and we've gotten very strident all of a sudden.
Right. And I think that what you're saying too, you're talking about processing, but you both have to process the information and then you have to make a decision about it. And so neither of those things are taking place. We're not processing it and then we're not making our own decision and then we're not responding, which is why you see some people on social media just reposting an article with no comment. And I have a lot of friends who talk about some of their problem with social media, especially Facebook, is that people just repost things, but they're like, I actually may or may not agree with what's being posted, but I want to hear what you think when you repost that.
Right. And that idea of it all funnels us towards, people who think the same. I mean, I've seen that in Catholic Twitter, right? You will find these alleys on Catholic social media where it becomes just as strident and just as angry and just as tribal, where that Catholics don't see each other as brothers and sisters anymore. They see themselves as, oh, well, you're that kind. Or, one of the most annoying things I've seen on social media is the boomer thing, like where you'll see younger, sort of maybe more liturgically traditional. I don't even know how to put it. But then there's like this anger. You'll see like this derision towards people who are like baby boomers. And you're like, dude, that is so anti the gospel. Like read St. Paul, treat elders as your mother or your father, right? But it's like this, well, boomers do this and boomers do that. And you're like, and it's like, oh, and I blocked that guy. And again, if you get out of your echo chamber and you actually talk to the boomers who sit behind you at Mass, what you're going to find people who have you're going to find some really saintly men and women who maybe don't feel the same way about liturgy you do, but they may have a depth of spirituality that you didn't know because you were so busy judging their outward expression, right? Mm-hmm. Because you were part of this tribal movement on social media, right? And we need to get out of that and stop being funneled into these groups and start talking to our family members, processing the news, whether that be about the church or about what's happening in current events. And really, getting to a point where, we are forming opinions and sharing mm-hmm. our opinions, not just getting into the groupthink and virtue signaling online.
And you're making me think, in the last episode, we talked about Colin Kaepernick and the drama with the NFL and the Nike now signing him. One of the things that I didn't say on air that I think is really important is that a lot of people are suddenly burning their Nike memorabilia and everything. They're burning their shoes, etc. if Nike's, say, supporting paying for abortion or they're supporting something like that, I definitely understand where people are coming from. But I think when all of a sudden one tribe says we're going to burn all of our Nike gear, that's saying we can't have a conversation with you. We can't even associate with you. And I have a problem with that. You know, I think that sometimes we're too quick to jump to that point, even with the things that we're buying, right? And grant, a lot of things we're buying are made in China and they've got their one child policy. That I get. But why aren't we burning our things over that? You know,
right.
Yeah, this is what we're making a big deal about and not wanting to buy content. But let's get into some of the practical things. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. This is Trending for anyone just joining us. So we've lost control maybe of our devices. We've adopted the 24-hour news cycle, perhaps. How do we take that back?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been doing workshops at schools and parishes called Parenting in the Internet Age. And one of the questions I pose to parents is why? Like, why? You know, and just really, like, my wife and I were talking about this the other night, because I had just done one of these workshops. It's funny, you do a workshop, and then you realize, like, oh, I need to live this too. But why do you need a phone in your bedroom? I mean, a phone in a bedroom, maybe, like, for emergency purposes, but, like, why do you need your cell phone on your bedside table? You don't. I mean, there's really no reason a married couple need to be looking at their phones in bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason, but how common is that in our experience?
Yeah.
And so rather than talking to our spouse, we're looking at our phones.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason a teenager needs their phone in their bedroom at night. Well, it's
right.
My alarm. Well, buy a cheap alarm then.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
You know? And also the phones that cause sleeping issues, just the light themselves. I know a lot of the lights have, you know, the sunrise, sunset settings, but I know for me, I either try to keep my phone in the other room or I put it up on a shelf on the other side of the room.
Right.
I even have the rule where my phone does not touch my bed because I shouldn't be working. I shouldn't be using my phone when I'm in bed. And it also, if we take our phone to bed with us, of course, we should already be paving aside that time to pray and not just flopping into bed, saying our night prayers. But if we're taking our phone to bed with us, do we ever stop to pray and thank
right.
God before the day's over?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and again, those cycle of things. And again, people say, well, I pray with my app, you know. Okay, well, sure, whatever.
That's not my thing, but I get it.
But yeah, it's possible. But then do it outside of your bedroom, right? Or
outside of your bed, even.
Outside of your bed. But, you know, they've done studies and they put like a cookie that looked like a phone, or basically a clay tablet that looked like a phone, on the bedside of students. And what they found is they slept worse with the idea of their phone by their bed than they did with the phone. Most college students actually, they did surveys. Most college students wake up at night to check their texts.
Yeah.
Like at some point in the middle of the night.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, the idea of why really becomes important.
Right.
And, you know, if we're going to develop a philosophy for connectivity in our homes, then that question of why, like why do I need to check my phone 15 times a day? Why am I checking my email at 7? Why, you know, all of that why becomes really important, because so much of us, of our life with these devices is just because that's the way it is.
Right.
And that's the way it is doesn't have to be the way it is, and it may not be healthy.
Right. So, you know, so here are some things you can do, you know, deleting social media from your phone, or if you work, you have specific social medias that are present, and I even have them in a hidden file further away. But what's interesting is if you use it often enough, your finger automatically knows how to swipe and get to that hidden folder with whatever social media app it is. But I keep my phone on black and white. Some of you journeyed with me through Lent and did the black and white challenge. I have not had color on my phone coming up on a year now. A friend of mine introduced me to it, and it has significantly decreased my phone use. I hardly use my phone unless for necessary reasons. So that's been huge. But you can also look at your phone, and there's an app that allows you in the settings to see what are your most used apps.
Sure.
Maybe that's what you need to get rid of. Instead of taking that mindless time on social media or browsing social media, whatever it might be, take that time to do something you love.
Right.
Whether, I know for me, I've identified, you know, I want to make sure I'm trying to take some ballet classes throughout the week. I want to make sure I'm reading, not just educationally, but, you know, for the joy of reading. I need to spend some time outside. Those are joy activities that also just keep me healthy.
I think being aware too, like I'd taken all social media off my phone. I took the email off my phone. I set that in the restrictions menu, and I gave my wife the power over that password. Not because she's my internet cop, but because I wanted to have to consciously have to justify getting things back on. And you know what I found myself doing? Checking my MailChimp account on my phone to see, because we do this month, this weekly newsletter with Everyday Catholic, and just seeing how subscribers are coming on. And it's been neat to see the list growing. You can subscribe to that at everydaycatholic.com. But I realized, like, I'm looking at this, like, obsessively now, because I just needed something, so I deleted that off my phone. Why do I need to do that when I'm not sitting in front of my computer at working,
but
right?
What are you looking for? Do you know what you're looking for in that?
The dopamine.
The dopamine kick.
Absolutely, the dopamine kick, yeah.
Because you're being liked, you're being approved, and so that's what we do, even just with the color of our screen.
Absolutely.
We're going to come back more on taking control of your devices and parenting in the internet age.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C. Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So we've been coming in here talking about, have we lost control of our devices? What's going on? And Chris was talking about how he's gotten rid of all these social media apps. He's, you know, removed mail from his phone into a no access pass. But now he's suddenly checking for the reviews or numbers on his website.
I was checking my MailChimp account to see who had subscribed to the Everyday Catholic newsletter. Yeah. And it was interesting, you know, honestly, like, oh, we got 11 new subscribers in the last hour. That's fantastic. You know, and but I just thought, like, wait, why? Why am I doing this? And I realized, yeah, it was just another diversion. It's another looking for a little dopamine hit when I see the positive response. So I deleted it off my phone.
Good for you.
And I can't. And so what I've done is I've taken away my own personal ability to put new apps on my phone without getting a code. And my wife now has become the keeper of the code, right? Just like I'm the keeper of the code for my kids' phones, right? It's not because I need her to be my internet cop. It's because I realize that I want this phone to be a communications device, not something to divert me, not something to stop me from being bored. Like, I want it to be something I use to more effectively communicate, to be more effective in my life, not something to distract me from my life.
And, you know, maybe this is a phase where you have to have someone else helping you through that transition, because I can tell you I've used applications on my computer to make sure that I spend no more time than 5 minutes on Facebook. I remember I used this in college. It helped me to develop good habits with social media. I no longer relied on them. I wasn't checking it constantly. And so then later on, I didn't need that anymore.
Oh, yeah. Email's so insidious because it gives you the idea that you're doing something productive. Right. And most of the time you're not. Most of the time you're just checking it and whether the things that came in were spam, because the majority of email spam nowadays, or something that could have waited that you could have been more effective in dealing with if you'd actually given it your full focus. But let's face it, like, doing email while you're watching your kids' gymnastics is not a great use of your time because you're not as focused. You don't have the resources. No one really types well on their phone. And so most of us can take those things off and say, I want to be more effective. And I'm going to do these in times where I can give my full attention to it. And as you've said, right, in the past, where I can touch it once, right? Right? And again, there's always exceptions. When I took all this stuff on my phone, I said, I'll probably ask you, to my wife, I'm probably going to get the code, put everything back on it when I go travel again, because that's a different scenario, right? I'm not trying to be radically present to my family when I'm on the road because I'm on the road, you know?
Right.
And then I just want to avoid strangers. So I want to get involved in that. No, it's but true though, right?
Like, but even then you want to be able to read more books when you're on the plane,
totally,
rather than just checking your phone. And
totally,
that's where we have to remember.
Or watch terrible movies.
The dopamine side of it's really important. This is actually, I know people are going to think this is like a radical side. This is why I took all the color off of my phone, is because every time we do that screen lift where we light up that screen, you get a dopamine kick from all the color and the notifications. So I have no notifications on my phone. I keep it in black and white unless absolutely necessary. You know, I think we all have our boundaries of what we can and cannot do. But also remembering, if you're trying to decrease your phone use, your activity on social media, you are going from receiving a high level of dopamine to a lower level of dopamine. And so you need to counterbalance that. You might need to exercise more, or else you're actually going to go through withdrawals from dopamine. And I'm serious. We are at the point where we're relying that much on the dopamine addiction that we have, even in the small ways.
And just to back up a couple steps. So dopamine's a drug that is naturally occurring. It's a neurotransmitter. It helps control your brain's reward and pleasure centers, right?
Yeah.
And so the little, like a little follow or a like on your social media media releases dopamine, and it's a reward response. And what's interesting is that as you get older, when you're younger, your body's more likely to signal out dopamine, right? And so as you get older in your middle ages, it's harder to come by. And so novelty, a lot of times what you find is novelty will give you a little more than you used to. And people can get in a lot of trouble with that because you go out seeking, you know, you get into this kind of dopamine addiction cycle, right? Where you're looking for these kind of phase points where you're happy in this moment, and you're chasing that. And it actually has been shown that men can get themselves into a lot of issues because they're seeking to feel alive, right? And dopamine makes you feel alive, and they start seeking it through novelty, through something new, and it can lead them right into infidelity, because it, all of a sudden they feel like they did when they were a kid because their body isn't producing it the same way it used to. And so it's a really powerful drug.
Right.
Being aware of what's happening in your brain is really huge if you want to be healthy.
Well, and this is why it's not surprising that I think many, and I think we're getting to a point where the majority of adults, older parents, are just as bad, if not worse, than their own children with how much they're using their phones. I'm amazed by the number of parents who can't really just address what is right in front of them because they're constantly on their phones, whether it's conversations or even at the dinner table. And so I think parenting in the internet age, you've been talking about this, Chris, you know, things like the phones don't go into the bedrooms at night. You insist on eye contact with your kids and the people you're talking to. You know, even friends, I'll be like, I'll just actually stop talking until the person will look at me. Not that they have to keep eye contact the whole time, but you know when someone's not paying attention. Or things like, you know, keeping the phones away from the dinner table. I see adults are just as bad, if not worse, than kids because kids know they want that human contact.
Right.
Very, very much so. I think that childlike desire for it is so intense with the parents versus the parents are not as good about this. I think I'm seeing more and more as the kids are trying to be at times.
You know, what's huge about this is from the time you're born, or, you know, from before birth until you're about 22 to 27, the prefrontal cortex of the brain is forming. It's growing, right? And this controls, like, impulse control. Mm-hmm. And so often and it's interesting, if you look at people who overuse the internet, for instance, or internet addiction, online pornography addiction in general, what we'll see is the gray matter of the prefrontal cortex is less. Mm-hmm. You're causing the brain to remain immature. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to control your impulses is lessened, and the ability to regulate, you know, destructive behavior is lessened. And so it's interesting because, you know, like insurance companies don't want to insure people under 25. Why? Because their prefrontal cortex isn't formed. They're more likely to make a bad decision and get in an auto accident, right? But we as parents give our kids these devices, that are hitting them with these dopamine rushes they're inhibiting their ability to put off, reward. And what we're doing is long-term effect is we're leading them down the road that they're going to be adults with an immature brain. They're going to be adults operating like adolescents. And I think more and more we're seeing that.
And that's long-term stunted growth or development of the brain, because you're seeing where they're taking years of heroin use and addiction, and they're comparing the brains of heroin addicts, alcoholics, and pornographic users, right?
And or even just internet addiction in general. It's not necessarily just, I mean, and I'm not arguing for porn addiction, but I'm saying, like, porn addiction will do it, but internet addiction will do it the same.
A glow screen, I think, might even be the better term, right? That glow screen addiction. There's actually a book out there, I think the subtitle is Glow Kids. I know Patrick Coffin did an interview with the author. I'm not remembering the name right now, but you've got to check out his work, because this idea that we've raised a generation, they're the glow kids, right? I mean, they've constantly got the glow on their faces anymore. But, you know, here we have to talk about, and this is something you noted, Chris, that we have to talk about a healthy philosophy for how we are connecting. And if we're on social media and we're in the texting world, the Snapchat, so much so, we're not pondering how our relationships are developing. You know, even looking to scripture, it talks, especially in Sirach chapter 6, about testing relationships and how a good relationship is medicine for the person. It's a great treasure. Yet we're missing that FaceTime interaction, and I'm not talking about on the iPhone, but that true FaceTime interaction that allows us to observe so much more about a friend.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, it's interesting. You talked about that, dealing with those questions, right? And we've dealt with this a little bit before, but that the importance of being bored. right? And that when you're bored, you get creative. You deal with, am I happy? You ponder, is this guy even good for me? You know, you ask all those important questions.
Right.
And what we've done, I mean, and I, it's funny, I'll talk to parents about this. I'll say, when was the last time you were in line at the DMV or the supermarket and you didn't take your phone out? Right? Because there's no space in our lives to be bored anymore. And so think about that. And now I'm a fully formed adult man. My brain is formed. And I got through the uncomfortableness of adolescence and dealing with and wrestling with that. And it was at times uncomfortable, right? But we've taken that from our young people,
right,
that every moment of their life is crammed with something that's supposed to stimulate them. So those questions of, am I happy? Are these friends good friends? You know, it's all taken from them. And, you know, that's something we need to engineer back into our kids' lives.
Well, we've also taken the human connection from the people around us and turned them into robots. I mean, think about in the grocery store. And I intentionally try to leave my phone in the car because I want to make sure that I am being polite to the checkers at the grocery store, that I'm trying to have a conversation. And what's so sad is that I notice a lot of them have become so desensitized to communication interaction that they actually have a hard time conversing at times.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mentioned this in a previous episode. There, I made my kids read a book this summer called The Fine Art of Small Talk, because if they can actually have small talk, it'll be a tremendous advantage to them in every job interview they go on for the rest of their life, because the rest of their generation doesn't know how to do it because they always go right to that phone.
Is this why your 6-year-old asked your wife how her day went?
That might be. He might be picking up on it. Yeah, that was so great. My 6-year-old asked my wife, like, Mom, what did you do today? And she began to tell him, and she was giving him details in every little part. And he goes, Mom, I just one thing, please. You know, he was like, I was just being polite, Mom. He's a little old man. We enjoy he's an ornery little person.
I love that he asked that question.
Oh, yeah.
You know, chewing on this friendship topic, I love looking to the Proverbs and really the wisdom literature. But Proverbs chapter 12 talks about choose carefully your friends, and essentially that the wicked can lead you astray. And I think that social media opens the realm to so many different quote unquote friendships. And I know some of them are real friendships, but you also don't realize what you are constantly being exposed to. And that can lead you away. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Bad company corrupts good morals, yet we have befriended everyone on social media and chosen that as our means of communication.
Yeah. You know, setting that philosophy for use in your home is important. I mean, it's limiting your devices to doing what you want them to do, right? You know, it's setting limits, like saying, well, these are the limits when phones go off in our home. It's enforcing those limits. It's not being lazy yourself. I mean, and creating a safe zone in your home. There's all these things that you can do. And sometimes it feels like we're on our own. So one of the things I want to throw out there is if you go to everydaycatholic.com/cheat sheet, you can get my whole Parenting in the Internet Age presentation. And I've got some directions on that you can see there.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Chris and I have gotten deep into this book for women only. The better headline that we like to use for it is What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. Don't bash it. This is the way men interact, the way they think. Fundamental to masculinity is this need to provide. And so that is what we're talking about today. The book is by Shanti Feldhahn. Would love for you guys to join us in the book. Share your stories as you're reading through it about ways you have seen this come true, not just in spousal relationships or dating, but with your son, with the men that you interact with, because the book isn't just about marital relationships. It's the way men interact.
You know, it's been interesting. I've been doing a lot of talking to parent groups this month. It's as we've been kicking off the year. Invariably, I talk to a lot of parents who ask questions about their relationships. Because when you talk about faith and when you go, when I go out as a man and I talk about the faith, there's a lot of women who will come forward because their husbands aren't there. And invariably, there's some conflict going on. And I've been able to recommend the book and things that the book has said to people that I've been out speaking. And what's been neat is to hear kind of the feedback, like, oh my gosh, that was so helpful. Or, you know, thank you. So that really helped out. And so, yeah, I think I hate the title, you know, for women only, but I think there's some really valuable stuff. So I'd say it's definitely worth picking up and taking a read.
We've been having a blast going through it. We've actually been going chapter by chapter on the main topic. So if you're just joining us, you guys, it's worth listening. Usually the first or last segment of the shows, I think this is like maybe the fourth or so show that we've done talking about this. You can go over to radiotrending.com and you guys, trending, you can take in your pocket anywhere. All you have to do is subscribe to the app. You can go to radiotrending.com to find out where we're available, from Google Play to Apple to Spotify, you name it. And then you can listen while you drive, while you get ready in the morning. You can share it with a friend, especially, you know, maybe you're a dude and you're sitting here wishing your wife or your significant other really understood this about you. Share the podcast with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree. You know, one of the things Shaun T says in the book is she says for men to get the book and to read it first and just highlight some things and then maybe give it to their spouse. Now, I think that's a great idea if you're in a good place with your spouse. I think it can also come off really passive aggressive if you're not in a good place with your spouse. So, you know, I'm not going to wholeheartedly endorse that information, but man, I think reading as I've been reading it, it's been interesting, you know.
This book, one of the things Shaun T mentions is you may be in a cycle where there's a lack of respect and therefore a lack of love. One person doesn't show love because the other doesn't show respect. Only person that can break that cycle is you. And this is why we are doing these shows and using these topics. Yeah, the other person may not change, but you making a change will make a change in your family and the people you interact with, even if it's just how you feel.
And that's such an important message too. And I talk to my kids about that, right? The only person's behavior you can control is your own. Right. The only person you really have total control over is you. You can't make anybody do what you want them to do. Only thing you can do is control how you behave. You know, there's so much power in that, that I think so often it gets lost or misplaced in our culture because we're so busy worrying about, well, they did this to me and they did that. No, 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 no. And you go, where's my action in this? Mm-hmm. You know, how am I exercising my action in this? Because you have a lot of power in your life to affect the change in your life that you want, in relationships that you want. Oftentimes fighting isn't the best way to win. Mm-hmm. Right. And, but that's what we get in this cycle of, this is what I need and this is what I'm going to do. And no, but seeking to understand the other person gives you a tool that will ultimately get you the victory in the relationship you want, which is really a good relationship. And so getting into like, if you're a person and there's some struggle in your marriage right now, well, doing whatever you can to help understand where the other person is, not that you get to get walked over, but to just maybe start from a place of, you know, to seek to understand, not so much to be understood. And maybe that can have a huge impact in your relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been cool for me in interacting with my brother, my now fiance. Ironically, we started this whole series before I was engaged. And so it's been neat to chew on, even bring up in marriage preparation, because I'm like, oh yeah, this book and, you know, chewing on these pieces here.
Did you get that? This resulted in an engagement. So there you go. It's a trending story. No, I don't know if the cause and effect is quite as strong. No.
So this topic this week is providing, and didn't matter what the income level was between couples, if the wife was making more or the husband, didn't matter that part of it. What mattered across the board is that men feel a tremendous burden to provide. Not that they're the sole providers, but that they feel this responsibility to provide a lifestyle, a means for their family. Or even if they're not married yet, men already feel this pressure.
Right. It's kind of wired into who we are. Men want to take care of. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, you know, and again, it's not because we're cavemen. It's not because we think women can't take care of themselves. It's not because we think we're better or smarter or stronger. But there's just something inherent that a man feels a responsibility and a desire to provide for, to take care of, to protect and defend. I mean, that's integral to masculinity.
You know, even in some of the stats that we're looking at, 8 out of 10 men responded that they would still feel the compulsion to provide for their family, even if their significant other, their wife, earned enough to support the family. It's still there. Not that they're degrading what she's making. Similarly, just one other, 7 out of 10 men basically saw that there's always this responsibility to provide and that it's often on their minds.
Oh, I would agree with the often on the minds thing. The last episode of Trending, you catch on the podcast, we talked about when a man's kind of staring off into space, what is he thinking about? Right. Well, a lot of times when a man's obsessing about work, it's not about work. It's about that feeling of security and the ability, like, because it's all tied into, can I provide? Am I a provider? Am I doing what I need to do for my family? When a man loses his job, I mean, it's more than the job. Right. And again, I think a great compliment to this book is John Eldred's book, Wild at Heart. Cause John Eldred writes this book, Wild at Heart, like, you know, and it's for men about men, essentially. It's kind of understanding the masculine journey. And too often men identify with what we do, right? I am a successful salesman. That's what gives me value. Right. And all of those kind of shadow selves, can be really destructive, and they can really lead to personal crisis if your whole identity is in it. And so on the one hand, I think Shanti makes a good point, like men have to be providers. As a man, I have to struggle against finding my identity in the fact that I'm good at X, Y, or Z, or that my job, I climb the ladder to do this, or if you're the spouse of a man, you know, if you're a wife, then how do you love your husband for who he is, but understand that's his struggle, mm-hmm. right? And so you don't want to feed into it and be like, you know, like your value is in this. Because, you know, a man wants to know you're going to love him and support him, whether he can provide or not, mm-hmm. but understand that's his struggle. Right. You know what I mean? And so when he's moody and depressed, that may be the struggle is going, I may have nothing to do with you. It may be because he's worried he's going to lose his job, or he didn't get the promotion, or whatever it is, because he somehow doesn't feel his ability to provide anymore.
Right. And how even men are sensitive to comments. There was this one story in the book where a wife was scrubbing the floor and she was complaining about a stain that she was trying to clean out. She just needed to be heard because she was complaining about the stain she was clearing up. But he heard it as, I can't even provide her with a new nice looking carpet. Like, and Grant, there was sensitivity there that maybe shouldn't have been had. You could say what you want about the story. But the reality is that this is one of those moments where you understand men really do that see that sense of responsibility and want to provide you with that ability to spend and have the things you want. But on the flip side, a lot of women disrespect that and just spend money very quickly without a thought toward what is being provided for as provisions to be carried over later on too.
Yeah. I mean, that idea of we want to provide everything, you know, I know in my relationship with my wife, I like to get her flowers. Right. I like to do that because I want her to feel that way. But she tends to be more of the one in charge. Like she thinks about budget, right? And those very practical questions. And that's something, again, people don't realize. Oftentimes men are romantic, women are practical. Like, and that's not that, you know, like in, you know, the Boston couple study came out years and years and years ago, and it kind of looked at that. Like men tend to be more romantic about relationships. Women tend to be more, practical about relationships. Is he a good mate? Men get caught up in the romance of it. But I would bring my wife flowers, and then she would get kind of stressed out about how much it costs, right? And so I stopped bringing her flowers at one point, but she loves to get flowers, right? And so it's that, and so we went around here now. And so now, like, we kind of had to work through that to be like, okay, well, like, I'm going to bring you flowers. And that's a good thing. And then it's okay for you to accept them and have it be a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I won't bankrupt us with flowers. You know what I mean? But subconsciously, you know, she has a need for security. I have a need to provide.
Right.
Right. And that sometimes can come into conflict.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the balance, I think you see it both sides. In some senses, she could have that desire for those things. And because he's concerned about providing, he may not provide those things that make her feel loved and need that sense of gift giving. So, you know, it's one of those moments where you have to remember, wake up, we see this cycle and we become so sensitive on both sides. But rather than being sensitive toward ourselves, being sensitive toward the needs and thoughts of others at the same time. And I think that that's the big takeaway here that we've got to chew on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Master Grant that I may never seek so much as to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand. Who knew that St. Francis was going to be the ultimate marriage counselor? But there's so much truth to it.
You know? So there are three things that I would recommend chewing on here from this topic of his need to provide. And that is, we just talked about the one is reconsidering existing areas of conflict where there might be conflict, just like Chris mentioned, the story with the flowers. The next would be relieving the pressure, you know, maybe relieving the pressure when there are times to lean in and help out financially, or even relieving the pressure by maybe you're budgeting a little wiser and spending less when there's a time where there are leaner months or there's concern with job security. And then third, and I think that this is a huge part of it, and it gets back to the topic of respect that we did a few weeks ago, providing that encouragement and appreciation that he is providing and helping to do these things for your family.
Right. And again, you know, not every couple is in the situation where the man is the one who provides most of the bread.
So for your marriage, we're really encouraging just things to chew on for your marriage, for developing in your young son or the other men around you.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.